Happily I have enjoyed our intercourse, regretting always that inevitable circumstances made it so rare. I confess I stand in awe of you. This you will not believe, for you have often accused me of flippancy. I am not half so flippant as you, but your thin and mocking smile, after some remark of mine, continually makes me feel that I have said a foolish thing, than which in your eyes I know there is no greater crime. You have told me that when an acquaintance has left a pleasant recollection, one should resist the temptation to renew it. Altered time and surroundings create new impressions which cannot rival with the old, doubly idealized by novelty and absence. The maxim is hard, but therefore perhaps more likely to be true. Still, I cannot wish that the future may bring us nothing better than forgetfulness. It is certain that our paths are different. I shall be occupied with other work, and you will be lost to me in the labyrinth of Italian hotels, wherein it pleases you perversely to hide your lights. I see no prospect of reunion. This sounds quite sentimental, and you hate effusiveness. My letter is certainly overfull of parentheses. But I wish, notwithstanding, with all my heart, that some day you may consent to risk the experiment. What say you? I am, dear Miss Ley, very truly, don't laugh at me, I should like to say, affectionately, yours, W.M. Chapter 1. This book might be called also The Triumph of Love. Bertha was looking out of window at the bleakness of the day. The sky was somber and the clouds heavy and low. The neglected carriage drive was swept by the bitter wind, and the elm trees that bordered it were bare of leaf, their naked branches shivering with horror of the cold. It was the end of November, and the day was utterly cheerless. The dying year seemed to have cast over all nature the terror of death. The imagination would not bring to the wearied mind thoughts of merciful sunshine, thoughts of the spring coming as a maiden to scatter from her baskets the flowers and the green leaves. Bertha turned round and looked at her aunt, cutting the leaves of a new Spectator, wondering what books to get down from Muddy's. Miss Ley read the autumn lists and the laudatory expressions which the adroitness of publishers extracts from unfavorable reviews. "You're very restless this afternoon, Bertha," she remarked in answer to the girl's steady gaze. "I think I shall walk down to the gate." "You've already visited the gate twice in the last hour. Do you find in it something alarmingly novel?" Bertha did not reply, but turned again to the window. The scene in the last 2 hours had fixed itself upon her mind with monotonous accuracy. "What are you thinking about, Aunt Polly?" she asked suddenly, turning back to her aunt and catching the eyes fixed upon her. "I was thinking that one must be very penetrative to discover a woman's emotions from the view of her back hair." Bertha laughed. "I don't think I have any emotions to discover. I feel..." She sought for some way of expressing the sensation. "I feel as if I should like to take my hair down." Miss Ley made no rejoinder, but looked again at her paper. She hardly wondered what her niece meant, having long ceased to be astonished at Bertha's ways and doings. Indeed, her only surprise was that they never sufficiently corroborated the common opinion that Bertha was an independent young woman from whom anything might be expected. In the 3 years they had spent together, since the death of Bertha's father, the two women had learned to tolerate one another extremely well. Their mutual affection was mild and perfectly respectable, in every way becoming to fastidious persons bound together by ties of convenience and decorum. Miss Ley, called to the deathbed of her brother in Italy, made Bertha's acquaintance over the dead man's grave, and the girl was then too old and of too independent character to accept a stranger's authority, nor had Miss Ley the smallest desire to exert authority over anyone. She was a